I've entitled my sermon as Grace, Special Grace. Unless we understand about God's grace, we have a hard time with this particular gospel message today. Indeed, this is the latter part of August, harvest time. Perhaps those who've never been much involved with farming are not that impressed, but I grew up on a farm in South Dakota, and how I vividly remember the weeks, especially of July and August, were outdoors from sunup to sundown, harvest time, special time. You never forget those days. What an awesome time, harvest time. And we find, though, in our lesson today, it was harvest time. Different than the harvest today. Here the farmers have their big tractors and their big combines, and they see a field, and you see it in full bloom in the morning, and by evening it's all gone already with the type of equipment that our farmers have today. Wonderfully so. We try to envision what it was in the New Testament time. There were not that many landowners. Many of the people who were then living, depending on the crops, they were hired. There were few landowners. And this was the occasion that our gospel lesson tells us about. And here we see that if they wanted to work, they had to rush out, be there early in the morning, because that's when the landowner came to hire the people. And can you just imagine, and this is what a former seminary professor said, to understand a parable like this, always try to put yourself in the role of those characters or individuals that Jesus talks about. So today we're going to talk about those who were out early in the morning and were hired to work, and what it meant to them. And then we're going to talk about the other group, those who also went out, and unfortunately they were not hired. And what did that mean for them? And then we see, what is the role of the landowner, picturing for us what God is like? So let us put ourselves into those particular situations. Can you just imagine the husband and wife, their children? And the wife would say, now, remember, he's going to hire somebody at 6 o'clock, and if you want to work all day, and we want to depend on that hourly wage for a day's work, you better be there on time. And she gets his lunch ready and sends him off that he's there and available and ready to go when the landowner comes. And sure enough, they were hired, some at 6 o'clock. And then the other group, others, oh, they were hired at 9 o'clock. That was great. I'm going to have almost a full day's wages. And look what I can do that for my family, so that I can support them and care for them. But then there were others still waiting. And he came at 12 o'clock, and they too were hired. What a wonderful time. I can have wages for half of the day anyway. And what that can mean to my family. Just like when you were working for a full day and you're promised X amount of dollars. Hey, you count on that. And you feel good about it, even though work wasn't so pleasant. But you know what was going to come at the end of the day. And so the first group was there. And it was wonderful to know about that. But then there were others who were not hired. What do you think was the motive behind this, that Jesus would choose this as a parable to apply it to everyday life? Well, I think it would still apply somewhat. That those who were hired all day, just like you were brought into church as a child, and you were taught all the beautiful things, and you belonged to the church. And after a while, as you gave to the church, you supported the church, and you began to feel that it belongs to you, that it's yours. It's your rights to do what you want. This church is yours. You have spent a lot of time and money and effort over the years to keep this church going. So you have something in old age. It belongs to you. We somehow want to take ownership of it. Okay. Is that good? To a point? Is it always good? Well, maybe not. Because if you're an owner of this, this church, this service, and everything, what about those that come late? Do they have as much of authority and ownership as you do? You've been here for 30, 40, 50 years? Well, they're latecomers. They're newcomers. They really don't have as much authority as we do. Isn't that what happens with human nature? Well, let's think about those people who came, who went out early in the morning, and they were not hired. What did it mean for them that day? Well, can you imagine? Their spouses also said early in the morning, I'll pack your lunch. You get out there. Let's hope you get hired right away because, you know, we have a mortgage to pay. And, you know, we have a lot of things we want to improvement in the house. And so she sent him out, and he was there, and she said, be sure to be put yourself first in line, that you'll be hired, that you have a full day's wages. Well, off he went. But they were part of the group. They weren't hired. Now, what do you do when you are not hired? You stand there. You wait there. You have no other choice for income. Uh-oh. There goes the paint job we wanted for our house. I was going to go to Menards and I was going to get some paint the house. She said, no, you're not working. She gets there at 9 o'clock. He's still not working. She goes and checks on him at 12 o'clock. Are you still standing here? You haven't been working all day? Where's the rest of our income now? How are we going to buy clothes for the kids? School's about to begin. Life was getting to be quite pressureful. They were not hired. There they were. You know, we have a tendency to think, and sometimes this has been in our philosophy, say, those that came late, well, you know, they were not really that anxious to work. They didn't want to work anyway. But there they were. Who had the hardest time that day? The guy that was working all day and knew that he was going to get his wages, and he knew he could take care of the family and the children? Or the guy that was standing around at 12 o'clock and still didn't have any source of income? His wife came to check on him at 3 o'clock. Are you still standing here? How are we going to feed the kids? It could be hash for supper tonight, you know. We have no money if you're not working. And here come 4 o'clock, he's still standing and waiting to be hired. And who is he afraid of now? That he wouldn't be hired, or that the wife would see him in idleness? Who was the most pleasant to see? Can you imagine what it meant? Who had the hardest day that day, do you think? The guy that was working all day, but he knew that he was going to get paid. Or the individual, now we have no stuff for the kids for school, and it's going to be 5 o'clock, and I come home and I have nothing. How will I explain that to my wife? Can you imagine? Who has the hardest day? Who would you rather be in that circumstance? Work through the hot, sunny day, toil, sweaty, but he knew what he was going to get. Or he didn't have anything, and the family is left barren. Who had the hardest day that day, do you think? We like to belittle the ones. Oh, they were shooting craps all day. They were in the back alley. He didn't show up to even want to work. Is that where they were? No. Scripture does not say in any bit of time that these were lazy people, they were wasting time. No, it doesn't say that at all. They were anxious to work, and it just didn't work out for them. Can you imagine being so desperate, that you wanted work, you needed to work, and you didn't have anything to come home? I can think, just a little sideline, of another situation where things can really be bad. A couple years ago, I read in the newspaper, at Christmas time, you know, we read about those who are under the bridge. They have a tent and they live there. And a nice couple, like many of you do, they know now this is just before Christmas. We're going to, on the day before, we're going to get a nice meal ready for them, get some warm clothes. We know this one gentleman is there living under the bridge. You know, we will come and we will provide him for them something, because tomorrow's Christmas. We're going to give them a nice Christmas. So you've heard about those couples, those wonderful people who go out of their way to provide a lot of things, and they do come and they offer to this gentleman. They dig him out from under the bridge in the dirty old clothes and trying to be warm. And they gave him this food, and he says, "Why are you doing this for me? You don't know me and I don't know you. Why do you want to provide this today, come on this cold day to do this?" And they said, "Well, because tomorrow is Christmas." And he said, "What? Is tomorrow Christmas? Did you ever have to say that? Is tomorrow Christmas? You know from October on that Christmas is coming. And you say, why do they keep ringing and singing those carols already?" But the gentleman was so desperate, and all he could say is, "Tomorrow Christmas." Let's hope that none of us will ever be in those circumstances that we don't know is tomorrow Christmas. We know it all too well, and all the wonderful carols, but can you imagine being that desperate? Well, that's our story today, of those who wanted to work, and they were not hired until 5 o'clock. The wonderful story. At 5 o'clock, they were hired. And now when it came to pay up, the trouble in part comes because those who were hired late, just 1 hour late, they got paid a full day's wages. Now, when the others who had worked all day, what do you suppose they expected? Well, they ought to get more. They worked the whole day. No, the owner gave them what they had agreed to do, just a full day's wages. And then the grumbling began. Then the grumbling begins. When we get as much as anybody else, it's okay. But if somebody gets a little bit more than we do, then look out. Isn't that human nature? That's what you call a sense of greed. And we never get over that. That's a disease of all human nature. And you and I have it. It's just a matter of, can we keep it under control? But the landowner gave the full day's wages to them. And then the grumbling began. Why is it that someone gets a little more than we do? We get our fair share. We weren't cheated at all. He didn't cut anything off. But just because somebody got just as much or a little bit more and worked less, we say it isn't fair. But you know what it is? That's grace. That's grace. It does not follow our regular legalities of life, regular morals as we would evaluate it. God's grace is always beyond what is, quote, fair. It's more than anybody has ever earned or deserved. That is grace. Now, how solid are we to keep our greed under control, even though we're not cheated? The landowner didn't cheat anybody. But those who worked less and got just as much, oh, they were sure they were cheated. No, they were not cheated. Why is it that the ugly sense of greed always pops up when we least expect it? And you talk to some parents, elderly folks, grandparents. The wonderful thing when they can be retired and they say that our children are all taken care of now and they get along real good, they're not greedy one with another. Isn't that a wonderful feeling when you can live in retirement with this sense of assurance? Versus some children are so, they're always backbiting and fighting. Like I heard of one father, a very wealthy man. The children were always fighting because he was getting more than I'm getting it. He sold everything and gave it all to benevolence so I didn't have to hear the fighting amongst our children. How do you teach children? How do you, of all the things we want to teach our children, or somebody teach us, is how to accept God's grace and never complain about it. How do you make sure that your children are always satisfied that each one gets the same? I remember years ago, we got a nice Snickers bar, special treat. Isn't that great? Those days, way back years ago, we didn't get many of those. And here was a Snickers bar. And my mother gave us, now you divide this with your brother and you can have half and he have half. And he said, I'll divide it. I'll cut it in half. And she says, well, how do we know how fair it is? She said, I'll have an answer for you. You cut it in half and you get the first choice. And that was pretty precise. That was quite precise. Who's going to get the biggest piece? But isn't that one of the hardest tasks that parents have to endure, that their children are not hung up on greed? You know, there's a story of it's an Irish story. This tornado went through the countryside and damaged some of the buildings and crops. And there they came. Mike was at a tavern the next morning, and he started complaining, isn't it terrible? The storm demolished my barn, and it's all torn apart now. Oh, that's too bad, said his friend. But you know what happened to other neighbor? He lost both his barn and his house. And then he said, oh, now I don't feel so bad. Why is it that somebody's got to be worse than I am before I think, oh, it isn't so bad? Or Dr. Sangster tells us a little story about a little boy who always wanted that 2-speed bike for Christmas. And Christmas morning came and he got his bike and he was happy as could be. He went out of the house, took the bike, went down the block, around the block, came home. Now he was in tears. Well, what's the matter? Isn't the bike work? Oh, it does. But Billy next door, his is a 3-speed bike and mine is only 2-speed. All of a sudden it wasn't so good anymore. Why is it that greed unexpectedly raises its ugly head again and again? 2 sisters were going to be taken to the store for Christmas to buy them new dresses. And each one could pick out they wanted. So they said to the youngest one, you choose the color dress that you want. A red one or a blue one. And she broke out crying. Oh, well, what's the matter? She says, I want her to pick first because I want hers. Why is it that greed in such unfortunate times raises its ugly heads? Indeed, greed and envy are always around, and they pop up in unexpected ways and destroy the goodness of the landlord. Wanted everybody to be treated fair, but because some didn't work as long, they didn't get any more, but they got much as I did, and I had to work harder. Greed is an ugly thing again and again. How do we control it? How do we master it? greed. I think so often, sure, we say we have our needs. Yeah, we have a lot of needs. But don't let your needs be overrun by your greeds. That's when trouble begins to arise. There's a story, Max Lucado, you've read some of his books, and there's a little book he wrote not so long ago on the 23rd Psalm, taking each phrase of that psalm and writes a little message about it all. Wonderful little book. And the first part of the 23rd Psalm is, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." What a wonderful little chapter. But he says, reminds me of the man who came to his pastor for counseling. He said he was in the midst of financial collapse. Life has been really tough. I have lost everything. And the pastor said, "Well, I'm sorry that you lost your faith." He said, no, I still have my faith. "But what did you lose?" "Well, you lost your character." No, I still have my character. "So what did you lose?" "You lost your salvation." No, I have my faith. I have my character. I have my salvation. And the pastor said, "Well, what more do you need? What more do you need? You got your faith, your character, your salvation. What more do you need?" There's three final questions I want to leave with you this morning. The first question I leave with you is this. Do you really realize how good you have it when things are going good? We remember this past week of all the bad things that went on. Somebody said something. Somebody cut me off when I was driving. But do you realize how many good things have really happened to you? There have been so many good things. Can we ever sit down and say, "Yeah, this was a pretty good week"? And I remember, as we started out the lesson today, harvest time. I remember harvesting was combining time out on the farm. It was an awesome time. You have to get the combine ready. They have to be oiled, have to be diesel fuel. The crops have to be there. And what a wonderful time, as I think the day of combining. And as driving around the field, there in the hopper, the combine, the wheat was flowing in. You make the second round and the hopper is full and you elevate it into the truck. And after two loads, you take the truck with that load of wheat and you can go take it to town. My brother drives the truck in and he comes home with a check for those 120 bushels of wheat. And all that check brought, and you know, that check was enough to pay my last year in seminary 63 years ago. Did I realize how good that day was? What that one truckload of wheat really meant for me? That I could finish seminary and spend 63 years doing this. God's work. Do we really know how good we have it when things are going good? And they go good many times, many days. That's the first question. Secondly, I hope you never have to raise the question, "Oh, is tomorrow Christmas?" That you're so far out of reality that you don't remember the wonderful carols, "O little town of Bethlehem, angels from the realms of glory, silent night, holy..." You just know it's coming. You know it's there. You know it's part of your life. You never have to ask that question again. "Oh, is tomorrow Christmas?" You know it. How thankful we can be for that. And the third question, I hope we'll never be confronted with. When I meet my Maker, He does not have to say, "Do you begrudge my generosity?" If I want to give through extra grace a bit more for somebody else, will I be unhappy? Do you begrudge me my generosity? I hope we won't be embarrassed when we're confronted with that question. Because we understand grace. Grace is always above and beyond all practicality, beyond all things legal, beyond all things moral. Grace, sweet grace, That's what we count on. And nobody has ever been cheated by God's grace. Amen. Let us pray.